Does your father know of your trip to the USSR?
Yes, of course.
Well, both you and he know that it's forbidden to bring books into the USSR.
Really?
But why? To our country, for example, one can bring in any books. In our country, people have the right to read anything. Well, this isn't Belgium, but the USSR. Well, how does the USSR differ from Belgium? We want our nation to think according to our ideology. You are really naive people. Do you really believe that 250 million people will think the way you want them to think? Unquote. The KGB agents didn't have an answer to that one. All they could say was, "It is forbidden to bring in books. You may get 10 years for it." To which she replied, "I know. We already packed some things in case we would have to go to camp." The smugglers have the help of the Russian emigre organization and contacts in the Soviet Union who helped pass the literature along. Leaflets have appeared in cities and towns far distant from Moscow, and books are regularly circulated among dissident intellectuals in Moscow. A Mr. Sokolov, a member of the section in charge of the confiscated books, was arrested a couple of years ago for selling those books to black market dealers. He hasn't been heard from since. But the smuggling goes on, and significantly, the Russian people show a great eagerness to get their hands on the forbidden literature. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K-Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
KPRL presents Sound Off, the longest-running radio talk show in San Luis Obispo County. Sound Off on the North County's choice for local talk, KPRL. The views and opinions expressed on Sound Off do not necessarily reflect those of KPRL, its management, staff, or sponsors.
Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Davis Body Shop, your auto collision specialist in Paso Robles and Atascadero.
This is Sound Off, where the North County comes to talk on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Well, good afternoon. This is Al Fonzie. Welcome to Sound Off, and I hope you have lots to say today. We can talk about all kinds of stuff. I want to give a shout-out first to my daughter, Lisa. It's her birthday today, so happy birthday, Lisa, who, with her family, is enjoying a nice day on a beach in Southern California. That being said, let's go on to the news of the day. What's going on? The hurricane left its rampage over in Appalachia. So far, 243 confirmed dead, 118 just in North Carolina, 92 people still missing in North Carolina alone, and the recovery is going to be slow. So many bridges, infrastructure knockout. It's going to take years to recover. The Nolichucky River in Tennessee, East Tennessee, the water was so violent, the flow so fierce, so large, that the riverbed itself has been changed so much so that it used to be a good whitewater rafting river. They're saying now you can take your life in your hands. Even though the rivers have returned to their normal beds, that river has become so treacherous, they don't recommend whitewater rafting at all. It can be terminal. It's going to take a while for people to figure out if it's even safe to be in anymore. Okay, what else is going on? Big news. They killed Yahya Sinwar, who was the head of Hamas. Israel did that this week through a drone attack. They have photographs of it, confirmed his death. This is a big deal. Why is it a big deal? Well, this is a guy who refuses to negotiate. No matter how many casualties he takes, no matter how much suffering that goes on in Gaza, he said no deal, no negotiating. He was released from prison a number of years ago from Israeli jails in a hostage exchange. He was in prison not for killing Israelis. He was in prison because he was murdering Palestinians who were trying to work with the Israeli government and working towards peace between Israel and Palestine. He is a hardliner among hardliners. He has killed many women and children. He was the architect and mastermind of the October 7th massacres that slaughtered men, women, and children, irrespective of age, sex, infirmity, or anything else. He was a butcher. And he killed as many of his own people as he killed others. He was really good a couple of years, well, numbers of years back, and basically killing a lot of Palestinians and of the Palestinian Authority, who basically got thrown out of Gaza when Hamas took over, for daring to suggest there could be a Palestinian state that did not include the entire present-day Israel. In other words, there would be no more Israel, there would be no more Jews, it would be strictly an Islamic state under an Islamic emirate, of course, thinking probably himself in charge. The October 7th massacre, just to put in perspective, equivalent to 33 9/11 massacres. We lost about 3,000 people directly on that day. If you would basically extrapolate that to Israel, it would be like us losing 40,000 people and having great powers around the world say, well, don't get so excited, calm down, make peace, make a deal. You can work with these people. Not really. Not really at all. You know, the Biden-Harris policy, the Obama-Biden-Harris policy, has basically been one of appeasement in this whole area. And they've done everything they possibly can to make sure that Israel does not emerge from this conflict as a winner. They wanted the strategic balance to go back to what it was before the October 7th massacre. In other words, the way things were on October 6th, Gaza would be a quasi-independent Palestinian state. The United States used international pressure and Israeli humiliation to compel them to accept the establishment of a Palestinian state in Gaza. Now, they had a state in Gaza. Gaza was independent. There were no Israelis there. They left in 2005. They even dug up the cemeteries and took Israelis that were Jews that were buried there home with them. And Hamas won an election 2 years later and took over in 2007. So from 2007 to 2023, Hamas ruled Gaza, and they received hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in foreign aid to build up the infrastructure of Gaza to help them establish a state. And probably 90% of it went to basically building the tunnel system, building up arms caches and things like that, and imposing a terror state in Gaza itself. They basically wanted a state to include Gaza, Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem, in keeping with the goals that Harris and Biden and Obama and their other advisors in that area basically set out. This is why the United States opposed ground operations in Gaza. They supported Egypt in blocking Gazans from fleeing Gaza for shelter in Egypt during the conflict or going to third countries. They opposed Israel's takeover of Rafah in the southern part of Gaza and the border with Gaza. They slow-walked delivery of offensive weapons, including rifles, tanks, artillery shells, bombs for the Air Force. Were compelled Israel to adopt a defensive posture and consistently sought to coerce Israel to accept hostage deals with Hamas that precipitate its strategic defeat in the war. They didn't want them to win, and everything they possibly could to keep them from winning, kind of like what they've done in Ukraine. They've sanctioned Israeli citizens. They claim obstructing the goal of establishing a Palestinian state. And likewise, the administration's consistent on serving pressure on Israel to admit massive quantities of goods into Gaza under the headline humanitarian aid facilitates Hamas survival and power. Now, when you send humanitarian aid, Gaza, the Hamas terrorist group, takes more than half of it to keep their troops alive. The military gets fed first, the civilians get what's left. And they want to do this again. Now, the idea of an Israeli rout of Hamas and permanent takeover of Gaza makes Israel too strong. That's in the words of Barack Obama's Secretary of State John Kerry, and a too strong Israel would be unacceptable to the Biden-Harris policies of appeasement in the region towards Iran because they have an Iran-centric policy. They want a balance of power with Iran basically being the lead. They want Iran to basically become a nuclear state, the same as Israel, to have, quote, this balance of power, supposedly creating peace in the region. Now, the problem with that is Iran is not going to be peaceful, has no intentions of being peaceful. They have an apocalyptic vision which requires them to create the conditions, the return of the Mahdi, their version of a Messiah. And to do that, they have to basically purge the area of all unbelievers. You know, first Israel, all Westerners, and of course, then taking out the Sunni states of Saudi Arabia and others because they're Shia Islam, and have this great apocalyptic conflict, their version of Armageddon, whereupon their Mahdi will return miraculously and establish his rule. But they have to create those conditions first. They're extremely dangerous because they're true believers, and they're perfectly willing to kill themselves. They've done this, shown this repeatedly since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. These are the guys you saw going down the streets back in the 70s and 80s, beating themselves with chains and things like that, you know, personal infliction of pain and suffering and things like that. But that's the bottom line. This guy, you know, he needed to go. They've killed him. They've killed thousands of Hamas mid-level and other commanders. They've killed multiple layers of the command structure of Hezbollah. They got to finish off the soldiers, the foot soldiers, inflict enough pain and suffering on them that finally become so disorganized, they just kind of lay down their arms and quit. That's going to take some more work. And they still haven't gotten all the hostages back. Remember, there's still 100 people who are hostages unaccounted for. They think maybe half of them may still be alive. Israel doesn't just go in and take their living. They also take their dead. The Muslims over there, when they wage war, they tend to mutilate the dead and desecrate their bodies. That, by the way, is a war crime. You're not allowed to do that. And when American soldiers engage in things like that, on rare occasions, it did happen, but on rare occasions, they were severely disciplined, usually court-martialed and sent out of the Army, or the Marines or whatever. But anyway, those are things you need to know about that conflict. And this administration is a policy of appeasement. And you can't get Kamala Harris to come out and give solid support to Israel. She's shown some warm platitudes about, well, we support their right to exist. But what does that really mean? What does it mean? You're not going to get a two-state solution at this point in Israel. There's no way the Israelis are going to live next door to a people who, out of the blue, come out and massacre them. By the way, there's an interesting book out recalling a previous massacre, which preceded the October 7th, 2023 massacre by almost 100 years. In 1929, the same thing happened in Hebron on a smaller scale in Israel. In that time, it was called Palestine, when suddenly mobs of 3,000 Muslims, armed with axes, swords, guns, knives, whatever they get, charged into the Jewish quarter of Hebron and began to systematically rape, murder, torture, slaughter men, women, and children, irrespective of age. Young women were raped. Bodies were mutilated. 79 were horribly killed, and I've got photographs of it. You don't want to see them, but it happened. The entire Jewish population was basically, after living there since the time of Abraham, thousands of years they lived there, because that's where the tombs of the patriarchs are buried, where Abraham and others are buried there. And it's a Muslim and Jewish community live there together. They lived there for 13 centuries since the Islam started around 700 AD. The bottom line is they were able to live in peace, but there were elements within the Islamic community that stirred up lies about the Jewish community. That's the favorite thing. They lie about them. They create blood libels. The people become hysterical, go in there, and they slaughter people. Now, the British Army, who had the mandate to protect them at the time, did virtually nothing. They kind of stood aside, and at the end, they told the Jewish community, you have to leave. You can't live here anymore. We can't, will not protect you. And basically, they lost everything. They lost their homes, and they were driven out as a whole community. There's photographs of them leaving Hebron and other parts of Palestine to live. Those things happen. There's a book out called Ghost of a Holy War by a woman named Yardina Schwartz. She talks about it. It's even-handed. But the bottom line, these massacres happen. They've happened frequently on smaller scales. But that was a big one that precipitated the massacre of October 7, 2023, which is referred to as the Al-Aqsa Flood, as the Gaza, the Hamas people related to it, or called it. Anyway, nothing new there. More appeasement on the part of Harris and Biden. That's what they're going to continue to do. And if you reelect them, well, that's what's going to happen. To the Jewish vote out there, and is this what you really want? Is this what you want for your compatriots living in Israel, to live under that kind of terror threat? Are you going to allow your people, your communities, to be blackmailed into basically a policy of appeasement to allow people to butcher people anytime they want? Because they're not going to be satisfied with just that. They want it all. And they're not going to be satisfied with anything less unless they are decisively and irrevocably defeated. Other things, elections. Okay, they're still at it. The left is still at it. And the tech communities, they're still censoring conservatives. James O'Keefe, he's an undercover journalist. He's been in trouble with California law enforcement repeatedly because his work against the abortion industry. But he's now exposed them again. And this time it's the media giant Meta, M-E-T-A. The parent company of Facebook and Instagram, and once again, they're engaging in political bias and they're censoring you. Under an undercover video, a senior Meta engineer states that any anti-Kamala Harris post on Facebook or Instagram are automatically demoted. You can have a relative say something about Kamala Harris being unfit to be president, and that stuff is automatically demoted. I'm not sure what that means, but it's not good. He further notes that the individual making the anti-Harris post would not be notified. He went on to say these individuals are then redlisted, which means they're shadow banned. And they're basically once again engaging in censoring your right to hear the truth, unfettered, uncensored by anybody for any reason. I mean, They have no right to do what they're doing, but they're doing it, and they're apparently getting away with it. So just so you're aware, if you're using Facebook, you're using Instagram, don't be under the illusion for a second that what you're hearing is true. Border Patrol, what's going to happen with them if Kamala Harris wins? Well, this is something else that's going on. Kamala thinks that she's going to be able to solve the border crisis. When she interviewed with Bret Baier on Fox News this week, she dissembled, and virtually every question was answered by her basically pointing a finger at Donald Trump. Well, you know that Donald Trump this, you know that Donald Trump that. Not true. And she basically, being a good United States senator, put into good use the filibuster because she didn't stop talking. He tried to answer questions. He tried to redirect. She just kept talking. She talked all over him. She showed up the studio 15 minutes late for a 45-minute interview. And then after that, they only had about 20, 25 minutes to talk. And she talked for 20 minutes. So that's 25 minutes. He could hardly get a word in edgewise to ask her anything. Anyway, she blamed Donald Trump for virtually everything in the open border. It's all his fault. Is it going to get worse? Well, the Border Patrol seems to think so, according to a number of agents. They basically said, we're going to quit. As one agent said, I'm not doing this again. Describing working under Biden-Harris, he spent 4 years in hell. He said lots of guys can retire will go if Harris wins. If Trump wins, they'll stay. Another agent explained, under this administration, they've done everything they could to make our job as inefficient as possible. They can't tell us not to do our job. But they're tired of watching criminals come across the border and then get, you know, detained and then get released, which is why you have murderers and rapists walking around the country. People who they knew were murderers and rapists have basically been set free by Biden-Harris. 15,000 murderers, 13,000 rapists, I believe, or maybe it's reverse. The bottom line, these are people that have no business in the United States. And you know what? They had a bill in Congress a couple of weeks ago that was basically to enhance border security and expediting the removal of people who were criminals, who were in the country illegally and were criminals. Every single Democrat in the United States Senate voted against its passage. Every one of them, without exception. I can't speak to the House because I don't have that information, but there hasn't been any support for real border security by the Democratic Party since these people have been in power. So if you haven't voted yet, and by the way, I have, my family has, we're voting early, and we're not voting often, we're voting once, but it's important you get out there and do it. One reason, if no, better than any other, is just that once you voted, people will go out and check who's voted, who hasn't. They have to go out and they call people who haven't voted and encourage them to go to the polls. Well, if you voted and they come out and say, okay, this person's voted, they can go to wait, talk to somebody else, another independent voter or someone who hasn't, and say, look, this is really important. You get out and have your voice heard. The thing is, things happen. You know, we had a big flood out here, really messed things up. People in Western North Carolina, Trump country, heavy Trump country, guess what? Postal Service isn't going to be able to get ballots to these people for a while. A lot of polling places have been destroyed or disrupted. These people's ability to vote for Donald Trump to offset Raleigh-Durham and other, and Charlottesville and other liberal bastions in North Carolina has been severely compromised because a lot of places in Western North Carolina, these small communities, basically are having a tough time getting the right to vote established. And they've got 2.5 weeks to fix that. But things happen. You could have an earthquake the day of the election. If you don't have to wait, don't wait. Get your ballots in, mail, because that's what the Democrats do. Those votes are in. They get counted. They're there. They're banked. It's important. But just to let you know, these are things to think about. Now, I want to tell you right now, the phone lines are open, 238-5775. I hope you will call me. I'd like to hear what you have to say, other than just me talking all the time. So, good time to call. Now, this is something that affects all of you. Now, for years, no, we got a caller. Great, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, you're there. Go ahead.
Of elections, you're probably not aware of this since you're way over back east somewhere. Mm-hmm. But they've changed polling places this year. And I live in the Templeton School District. And I've always voted in Templeton, either at the Women's Club or the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And I know to go there. However, when I was filling out my ballot, I wanted to check my voter status. And went online and did that and said, your polling place is in Atascadero.
What?
I think
why
it's the Elks Club.
Okay, well, that's the north end of town, at least.
Yeah, but I'm wondering what's going to happen on Election Day. All the people who want to vote are going to show up at the usual spot where they've been voting for the last 20 years, And I said, oh, no, you got to go here.
That's happened to me a few times in Atascadero. They moved my precinct around. I had to go find it a couple of times. But, you know, it's inconvenient.
It is indeed inconvenient. And the election materials they send you don't say where your polling place is. You know, I would think they would do
they
that.
They don't? I thought they did.
I didn't see it.
Okay, well, check it again. I thought they did, but you can usually check it out. What they do is they consolidate precincts. Sometimes they don't have enough workers to man all the polls, and they're trying to get people to do early voting. I think that's part of it, too. I know the last time I voted in person there in Atascadero, they were very upset with me because my wife and I both insisted on going in and filling out our ballot right there at the polling place and not filling out a ballot and dropping in a return by mail thing. But anyway, yeah, we did that. But they really want everybody to vote by mail and vote early and things like that. So, but they consolidate things because it's easier to administer, more cost effective, I guess, too, and they don't have enough volunteers. And that's going to continue. That's not going to stop.
They still have the same two polling places in Templeton, the Women's Club
you,
and the church.
Huh. But they moved you.
Who knows?
Who did you make mad?
Anyway, good talking to you.
Okay. Well, thanks for the information. Yeah, check your polling places, folks. If you don't know, call the clerk's office, county clerk in San Luis Obispo Elections Department. Tell them where you live. Say, this is my precinct, or this is where it says, where do I go to vote? And they should be able to tell you. I don't know if they still have a clerk's office in Atascadero. They used to. I don't know if they still do. But nothing else, give them a call and find out what you got to do. And they should let you know. And somewhere on those materials, I remember in the past, they would tell you precinct such and such. And just check those things. If nothing else, you go to a polling place, tell them you live, they'll say, oh, you're over here instead. That's where you got to go. That's inconvenient, especially for older folks who find it more difficult to get around. But whatever you can do in advance, go ahead and do. So, okay, so we're good with that one. Give us another call. The phone lines are open, 238-5775. Now, another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Question, there's some new law that our government passed where military can shoot civilian population. Have you heard anything of that nature?
Yes, it's a Department of Defense directive. It's not a law. It's a new policy, and it basically makes it easier for military forces assisting civilian law enforcement to engage, if need be, in domestic defense. Now, I'll say this. When you take your oath of office in the military, it says, you know, defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Now, it's been done since George Washington was president, using troops against U.S. citizens. He did it in Shays' Rebellion in the 1790s. It did it in the 19th century. You had the Civil War. You had Robert E. Lee lead U.S. troops against John Brown at Harper's Ferry. We didn't have real civilian law enforcement. You might have a constable or sheriff, and he couldn't take on an armed force. And you had that up until 1877 when they passed Posse Comitatus Act, which is power of the county, which made law military was not allowed to engage in civilian law enforcement efforts. And that was designed to end Reconstruction in the South. Now, after that, the military has been called in frequently. You had General Funston in San Francisco, 1900, took troops to the Presidio, went into San Francisco, basically declared martial law without authority to do so, and they shot 400 people for looting, summarily executed them. That's not in most of the history books, but it happened.
The Watts riots, they were shooting people in the Watts riots.
Yeah,
and
they did.
Wasn't Waco, Texas kind of one of those questionable things?
Yes. Waco, Texas was very questionable because you had a blurring of the lines of what was military, what was not, and was it a violation of Posse Comitatus because you had U.S. Marshals, and you had military, supposedly military special operations people supporting the operation. They weren't engaged in direct conflict there. You had federal law enforcement officers leading the way they did things, but they also had that armored vehicle they used to punch into that building, which resulted in the fire, which killed all those people. So that was an issue.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I might lose you, but didn't they use sarin gas, which is illegal in the Geneva Convention? I mean, some of the stuff was really questionable.
They did not use sarin gas. I don't know where that came from. It's not true. They used tear gas. And that they, unfortunately, this stuff is very flammable. It started a fire, and that fire, you know, just took off, and it killed, what, 70 or 80 men, women, and children in there. That was an excessive use of force. It didn't need to happen. Janet Reno was the attorney general. She was personally responsible for Waco as the attorney general because she authorized that operation. And the guy that led it on the ground was later promoted. You know, it never should have happened. But, you know, like lack of accountability with some of these federal agencies, it caused a lot of problems. And Waco and Ruby Ridge, which was another incident of law enforcement being heavy-handed in how they did things, that led to the Murrow building in Oklahoma City being bombed by, I can't think of his name right now, the kid that did it. Tim McVeigh, thank you. And he was angry about that, and he went out with another friend of his, and they basically conspired to attack the federal government, and they hit the Oklahoma federal building, and they killed 160-plus men, women, and kids in that. You know, these events...
I heard there's some declassification of that, and that there was more information about the underneath the building, that there was tunnels. I don't know how true that was, but it's pretty intriguing.
No, it was an outside explosion. He drove a vehicle up, and he used the fertilizer stuff, ANFO. He put an ANFO, ammonium nitrate, and fuel oil. It's an oxidizer, mixed them together, and they set it off, and it had the equivalent of 4,000 pounds of high explosives going outside the building, collapsed the building, killed all the kids, children in the nursery, too. That was terrible. It was horrible. It was a horrible bombing, and he was executed within 5 years for what he did, but... I mean, these things have reactions, and you got to be careful what's reading the internet. There's a lot of crap out there that goes on. Just like they're censoring, on one hand, there's also a lot of untrue information out there. And there was no sarin gas or anything like that, you know. But this is where policy matters. The people that run the presidency, you know, holding people accountable, people who do not see the American people as an enemy. You have people like Hillary Clinton running around saying we're a basket of deplorables because we vote for Donald Trump, or we don't like what they're doing, we don't agree with their policies. And you have people like Kamala Harris, you know, her record in California's attorney general is not one shining example of, you know, government restraint or respecting the people at all. She's a very arrogant person. And a very dangerous person.
Sean Atwood, and he was in prison in Arizona. And that's where I learned about some of these prisons were actually private prisons and stuff. And at that time, they needed to fill up these prisons. And so they were, some of these people they're prosecuting, going after people with weed, you know, infractions.
Oh, big time. She was known for that. She put a lot of black Americans in prison, you know, for violations of marijuana and things like that. And she could get them, she did. You know, that was the thing she boasted about. And she did other things like that. She put men, you know, these transsexuals, she put like, you know, guys like that in California women's prisons. And they're still doing that. You know, women are being raped on a regular basis by these guys who claim to be women. Sexual predators, murderers, and everyone else. There's another one that's read about today. He's going to a women's prison because he says he's a woman. And these judges and the California legislature, okay, you go off to the women's prison and they're being victimized. They share cells with women, and these women have no say on who gets to be in their cell. And there are terrible things happening to women in California prisons, and the Democrats think that's fine. They don't have any problems with that anymore. They have problems with men beating up women in sports events and things like that.
So this podcaster guy, apparently said he was innocent, but Kamala knew he was innocent but wanted to make an example out of him, and she was actually at his trial. And he said basically she was there, knew it was all bogus, and he says she's just laughing at him. And there's like a handful of these cases, and it's sad because these guys apparently said they were innocent, and some of the allegations were just really weak. But Kamala made sure that he put a lot of people in jail for very little.
Well, when you're on the wrong side of the political spectrum in places like California, don't expect a lot of mercy from the system. Just remember a few years back, we had a 90-something-year-old woman who was sitting down in an election at a voting place, and she was a campaign worker, and she was on the phone talking to your friends saying, please get out to vote. And basically, she shouldn't have done that. But it wasn't a real big deal. She was hardly intimidating anybody. She should have been outside the polls, but she sat on a couch and didn't even think about it. They sent in a deputy assistant state attorney general from Sacramento to prosecute her in San Luis Obispo County, eventually fined her $500 because she was a very prominent woman active in Republican politics. But that's the kind of stuff they do under Kamala Harris and people like her. We're out of time. You got to take a break. But hey, thanks for your call. Thank you.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.